Okay, we'll probably start from the third because the fourth one is.
Hari hi om sahana bhavatu sahana bhunaktu saha viryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai om shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
The phrase Chaito Darpana Marjanam indicates the original transcendental nature of the living entity. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the living entity is a part and parcel of the supreme absolute energetic truth. He is the aggregate of all jivas. Like rays of the sun, the jivas are the same spiritual nature as the supreme, but they are infinitesimal in size. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan has similarly analyzed Godhead as the infinite Supreme Lord, with the jiva being his infinitesimal part. All transcendental qualities are eternally present in perfect fullness in the Supreme Lord. His pure ego is manifest as both absolute knowledge and knower. The jiva is also in possession of transcendental knowledge and pure ego, but to a partial degree. By logic, qualities of the sun like heat and light present must also be present in the sun's rays. Okay. So is that Krishna's unlimited in this, and he's absolute knowledge and knower. So all knowledge is him, and he is the knower of that knowledge. Right? So in the same way as the jivas, they have the same thing, but to a small degree. Right, just like there's heat and light in the sun, so there's going to be heat and light in the sun ray. But, you know, it's less. Does that make sense? You know, we hear about how hot the surface of the sun is. Right? And so when the sun rays come to us here, there it's much less. Right? So like that in the same way. Does that make sense? Right? Of the two, then, it is the Supreme Godhead who is fully independent. He possesses and embodies all transcendental qualities. He is the origin of everything, and he enters into material nature as its controller. He alone creates and maintains the material world. As a reservoir of all spiritual bliss, he relishes his own spiritual self and distributes the nectar of pure love of Godhead by the means of his pure devotional service. He forces all living entities to taste that sweet nectar. I think we've read this. But still, that's the nice thing about it. You can keep reading it. It's still it's fresh. Innumerable living entities move through varied stages of existence. Some become eternally conditioned. Some become eternally liberated. When the jiva rejects the Supreme Lord, he is eternally ensnared by matter. But if he again aspires for the shelter of the Lord, the curtain of Maya that separates the jiva from his own transcendental identity and qualities is forever removed. He is and immediately restored to his original pure self. Cleansing the mirror of the mind reveals five truths. Yeah. So this thing, eternally conditioned, eternally liberated. So it's important that that point is that, he says here, if we reject, right? Jiva rejects the Supreme Lord, then he becomes eternally conditioned. But that means that eternally means you don't know. Prabhupada says what this eternal means. We can have our own definition, of course. But Prabhupada says that eternal means no one can say when it started, nor when it will end. Therefore, it's eternal. But when you change the consciousness, right, and that then, and Maya then therefore is removed, then he becomes eternally liberated. Because once that goes away, it goes away eternally. So then, you know, so therefore we're not working on this state of that. It means the jiva itself is eternal, but his conditioned or liberated state, that's not working on the same time frame. Right? The jiva always was there, is now, and always will be. So that's eternal. But when he became conditioned, when he'll get out of that, no one knows. So it's as good as eternal. And when he becomes liberated, then he will be eternally in that position. So you don't count, well, he wasn't as eternal as the other living entities because he was in the material world, you know, for, you know, like that. Or this one was here, oh, he was two lifetimes of Brahma longer in the material world than this one. Or, you know what I'm saying? So the point is we're taking the present, right? Because that's actually what matters. The present means, what are you doing now? So if you're in the liberated state, you're liberated. And so it doesn't matter what you were, because that's what you are now. And if you're conditioned, then that's your state. It doesn't matter that you were in the spiritual world, rejected Krishna. You're here now. So that's what we have to deal with, right? So we're dealing on action, because it's through devotional service, and it says that everything's going to be established. Right? Okay, yeah. He relishes his own spiritual self, distributes the nectar by means of his pure devotional service. It's only through action, through devotional service, that then will come to the proper platform. Right? Nothing else is going to bring us to that platform. So it always comes back to action is what's going to actually make things work. Right? It's unfortunate, you know, because we're so lazy. We're always looking for some easier way out. But it's always action. Right? That's what's going to make things work. Right? Therefore, it is clear that the jiva is infinitesimal. Although he is of a transcendental nature, having pure ego, pure consciousness, and pure form. If he turns away from God and contemplates material energy, his pure nature becomes contaminated by nescience. In this way, the soul's consciousness is like a mirror. Just as it is impossible to see one's face in a dusty mirror, it is similarly impossible to see the real self in the mirror of consciousness when it is covered by the dust of ignorance. But if one begins to render loving devotional service, particularly hearing and chanting the holy names and pastimes of Sri Krishna, under the influence of the Lord's Hladini pleasure potency, the material contamination of nescience is completely eradicated. Right? So we see here is that when devotional activities are being performed under the influence of the Hladini potency, right, then your material contamination is eradicated. Because when you combine the chit with ananda, then the sat potency or the sandini potency gives you realization. Right? Because that's your state of existence, is the sandini. So in the spiritual realm, the sandini will mean your natural spiritual existence, your position. In the material world, that is covered by ignorance. So your position in the material world is governed by ignorance. That's your identity. That's your existence. So when sandini removes that ignorance, there is no material identity, so then you take up that position. Does that make sense? So that's why then performing the devotional activity under the shelter of the pleasure potency, because that combination between chit and ananda, that's the bhakti potency. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, so then all the three energies are there. Right? When you perform your, in other words, if you perform your activities in knowledge, right, then you are. Suddenly, everything becomes peaceful when they turned off that motor. Right? It's amazing how you don't even notice it, and then it goes off. It's just like, oh. So that's liberation, right? Just get out of the material and, oh, this is nice. That's it. That's as good as it gets. So when you perform an activity, how do you say? You perform the activity with the idea of pleasing Krishna, right? So that means it's under the Ladini potency. Then one is freed from material existence. Right? So in the same way as that, then in that so that you're dealing with the modes of nature. Right? So action is done in goodness and knowledge, so that then frees you from material energy. Right? Because it changes your existence. So in the same way as when devotional activity is performed under the Ladini potency, then the Sandini potency then reveals the natural position. Right? So the one is getting you out of the material world, the other is getting you into the spiritual world. Right? So they both happen by the same activity. Does that make sense? Yes.
So when you're out of the material world, but you're not in the spiritual world yet.
So you want to know if you can still go shopping. Pick up a few things before you get the brunch.
So, by consciousness, as long as we're still looking towards Krishna, then we will remain liberated from the material world. But as soon as we get attracted to the material world, then straight away you come back.
Yeah. But the thing is the devotee, our process, we're only coming to the liberated platform because of the devotional focus. So generally speaking, devotees aren't going to come back to the material world because of looking for something to do.
Yeah, so but they still need to keep engaged.
They have to keep engaged.
But
otherwise, generally what it would happen for the... It means just like this. If you're here in this form, in this body, then you could get distracted and get, you know, by different things here. And like Bharat Maharaj, get distracted and then come down to, you know, be in a less fortunate position, right? So that's why his jada bara, then he wasn't about to get involved with anything, so he didn't even bother with any convention, because if he bothers with conventions, then he's appreciated, he becomes part of the scene. He doesn't bother with conventions, everyone leaves him alone, and there'll be very minimal attachments. So you have that aspect, but for the devotee, then by following these things, then one comes to the transcendental platform where one is situated in one's natural service to Krishna, in one's sarup. Right? So on that platform, then, if you have that determination, very quickly you get the association of the Lord's eternal associates. Picking up their mood, then, you know, that ensures your further advancement. What you have to be careful of is that getting to that platform, then one is just very happy with being in the transcendental situation. You know, so in other words, the impersonalists, because they don't believe in form, their liberation takes the form of Brahman. Right? So it's just light. Right? But for the devotee, then liberation is the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. So that means being situated in Gokul, in the Lord's pastimes. Right? But one can be distracted that the spiritual world's nice, right? There's no problems, there's no difficulties. You know, everything works very nicely. You know, so then one can get distracted by that. That will slow you down.
It will just slow you down and keep you going cool, or eventually your mind will wander there and stuff?
Generally you won't wander back to the material world, because it says once going there you don't return. It's just a matter of how many lifetimes you want to spend in Gokul Vrindavan before going to Goloka. That's the question. So if you're proud, this and that, because what can happen is generally something like that, it depends. One could be actually be born there, so then that might, you know, drag it out. But generally, you know, things work out, as we see in the Bhagavatam. More the danger would be in this lifetime if you come to the platform of Bhava and you don't take that very seriously, or you become proud, then you'll keep taking birth in the material world as an Uttamadhikari. But you'll stay there for hundreds of births. You know what I'm saying? That would be more likely of a place where, if you're talking about getting stuck, it would be in here where you're an Uttamadhikari, you're in Braj by meditation, like that. Because generally, once you're born into Braj, then that's not so much of a problem. You know what I'm saying? So that's why one has to be very careful that one's pride is not there, otherwise that might get in the way of You know, in other words, spiritual pride is there. Otherwise, that might get in the way of that kind of situation. But that you have to, that's, you know, very much dependent on Krishna's mercy. But it's not something that you take for granted. That's why then we make the endeavor to try to do it right so that it's not dependent upon Krishna being kind to us that we got in a better situation, but that we were making that endeavor to please him, you know, so that, you know, because then that sincerity is there, so that pride is gone. Is that okay? You got a question? Okay. Therefore, this. When the jiva's pure consciousness, which is a function of his pure ego, manifests itself, he sees reflected on the mirror of his pure ego the five principles of the Supreme Lord. Oh, of the Supreme Lord, the jiva, prakriti, kala, and karma, with absolute clarity. Okay, that's what was before he was saying. Cleansing the mirror of the mind reveals five truths. Right? So the truths are, then here, basically, chit, achit, ishwara, kala, and karma. And this is dealt with in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Gita deals with these extensively, but in the introduction, this is brought out very much. Like that. So he has complete clarity on this, so then he won't be bewildered. He will not be in illusion about this. He sees the reflection of his original identity without any distortion. And this helps him to know his inherent nature as an eternal servant of the Lord. When one becomes truly expert in serving the Lord, the propensity to enjoy material life is converted into a loving devotional mood of service. So it's not something new. It's you're converting what's already there. Because what we're dealing with here is a conversion of what was there. Right? The natural love is converted into that enjoying propensity. And when one takes up the devotional service and then practices and it comes as the mirror of the mind is cleansed, then these five truths are revealed, then one will give up that tendency to try to enjoy the material energy. So one will convert the same action, you know, because you have the Lord, the jiva, prakriti, then you have time and karma. So how you use that time and karma, that will determine whether you're in the material world or spiritual. You see it with clarity, you're not going to use the spiritual. I mean the material, you're going to use the spiritual. Right? So then that itself then will take one out of the material nature. It will convert one's enjoying propensity back into love. Prabhupada says lust is a transformation of love. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of turning it back. So it's the need of the living entity. So in this material world, then lust is the need. Well, in the spiritual world, love for Krishna is the need. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So chanting is the soul's swadharma. Okay, so that was... Okay, so that was that aspect of cleansing the mirror of the mind. Right, so that's the process. By taking part in the devotional activity, then the sundini potency starts to reveal these five truths. That means the mirror is getting cleaned. Right, ignorance is removed because the mirror is our natural consciousness polluted by ignorance. Right, does that make sense? We have a natural identity that becomes polluted by ignorance, so the pure ego becomes false ego. Then the mirror is dirty. So when we look in it, then we see our material identity. We don't see the spiritual. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the Chaito Darpana Marjanam aspect. Okay, now the next part. Chanting is the soul's swadharma. The word bhava, right, so indicates the jiva's forcible subjection to repeated births in this material world. Bhava is a continuous cycle of birth and death called Mahadavagni, a raging conflagration that cannot be extinguished by any means other than the congregational chanting of Krishna's holy name. Right. So here we have bhava and bhava. Right? So the difference is long and short. Bhava is this material world. Right? Does that make sense? A question may arise at this point. When one is at last enlightened about his swadharma, or eternal function as a liberated soul, does he then cease chanting Krishna's holy name? The answer is no. The stopping of chanting never occurs, because chanting God's names is verily the soul's swadharma. The phrase Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam confirms this by specifically conveying the sense of the eternal activity of the spirit soul in his original spiritual condition. Because the process is chanting. So we're bringing up Chaitodarpa Namarjanam, that's coming up from this process of Samkirtan. So now, when the mind becomes clean, now do we need to continue chanting? So he's pointing out as it's the natural nature of the living entity. Right, so this cleansing of the mirror means that this bhava, the material energy, right, bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam, that will be removed. Right, so when the mind is clean, then the material existence ceases. Right, and this then he's saying that this chanting will continue because of this Shreya Kairavi Chandrika Vitadanam. Then that will say that that will then continue this. Does that make sense? Right. So we're taking up the process that's purifying us, right? By the Samvit potency being in contact with the Hladini potency, then Sandini potency reveals knowledge, gives realization, right? So that means that by doing that the mirror becomes cleansed because the ignorance is removed. Right? When the ignorance is removed, then the material existence recedes. Because it's only there because we think it is. You know what I'm saying? We think the mirage is real. Right? But actually it's just a bunch of sand. The sand is real. You know. Does that make sense? But we think it's something more. So the material energy, we think that it's a place where we can be happy and nice, and it's eternal, and all these things, which is illusory. It's dead matter that doesn't really have much to do with the soul. So that becomes removed. Because of that, because suffering is the result of enjoyment. Because if you're going to balance the two, how much enjoyment you have materially is how much suffering you're going to have materially. So if you have no material enjoyment, there is no material suffering. Does that make sense? So if whatever you have and are doing is connected to Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, it's not material facility. Therefore, it will give you no material anxiety. Does that make sense? So then this Bhava Mahadavagni is removed. Right? Does that make sense? The greatest benefit. Jivas who are enslaved by Maya prefer to enjoy material life. And this desire perpetuates their bondage to the cycle of birth and death. This is... Yes? It's by some connection.
Yeah. So if it's not connected to Krishna, then by default, there will be suffering because of that.
Yes.
Because we're taking what's not ours to enjoy.
So no.
Because we're...
The point is, it's like this. As remember we were discussing before about the levels of perception. So in aparoksha, then it is what is gained by experience. So as long as you're experiencing it, it's there. But as soon as you start to analyze that experience, it's no longer there. Because then it becomes something of the past, and past is ignorance. And then ignorance gives trouble. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, one's performing, so through the proper performance of one's duty, that is what one gives one result. So in the performance of the duty, if it's done under the shelter of the Kladini potency, then you're not dealing with the material. So its results aren't material. They may look exactly the same, but it's not actually a material result.
So by shelter because, of Kladini potency, you mean according to Purushan and Shastra?
Yes. Well, there's one nice quote, I think it's in the Ishupanishad, Prabhupada's saying that, I can bring it tomorrow for the morning class. It basically is saying that if you don't follow the Vedic injunctions, there's no question of advancing in devotional service because that's given by Krishna. Right? You know, so that point is that so one would be doing what's supported by Guru Sadhu and Shastra. So that's the activity. Then we're talking about the mentality as being done to please Krishna rather than herself. So when both of those are there, then that experience, you're very happy. Why? Because Krishna's happy. We just have to get used to this kind of happiness. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's take a very practical example. Let us say we're sitting nicely, there's a nice kirtan going on, it's the Abhishek of the deities, right? On the stage are people that know what they're doing, and there's no riot or anything crazy there. You can see the deities, and you can watch all the preparations and everything going on. So there's a nice kirtan, you can see everything and all that. So that's nice. And you find it nice, right? Now, there's a concept that unless I do it myself, I won't get the mercy. So then you have to go up there, fight to get on the stage, stand there with everybody else. You can't see anything. You can't really take part. And then finally, when you get up there, then you get a conch shell or something like this, and you may do it wrong, and someone tells you you're not doing it right. And then, you know, that's all you get, and then you're kicked out. You know what I'm saying? But somehow or another, that's considered you're getting more benefit. But that was like directly, I'm bathing the deity, therefore I will be happy. Well, the other is, I'm watching someone bathe the deity and I'm happy. Why? Because the point is Krishna, in either case, you have to please Krishna to be happy. So if your bathing of the deity is so nice that Krishna's pleased, you'll be happy. But if you have people there that know what they're doing and they're bathing the deity, Krishna's happy. If you see that service to Krishna and Krishna's happy, you'll share the same happiness. Does that make sense? So it's subtler. Not as popular today. Right? But that's the whole point, is the jiva has to get used to this concept that I don't have to be the enjoyer to actually be happy. Krishna's the enjoyer, and if I assist in his enjoyment, that's actually how I'll be happy. So it's a matter of that subtlety. So the activity may be exactly the same, but because there's no sense of proprietorship over the activity and result, there's proprietorship with Krishna, but not with the action and the result. Does that make sense? Then it starts to work nicely. Because we don't think, I'm pleasing Krishna. Right? You know, we're assisting the devotees who know how to please Krishna. Right? And those devotees will never say, I'm pleasing Krishna. They'll say it's because all these others are assisting, therefore it went so nicely. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Then that aparoksha has meaning. You know, just as an example is that you're doing the activity, but you're not focusing on trying to enjoy there. Because as soon as you do, you're not actually performing the activity. You know what I'm saying? So then that's where it's lost. So when you're doing the devotional service, then it will bring that to the proper transcendental platform. Does that make sense? Yes.
And also in this connection, the story of one devotee who was bringing water for Jagannath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he never actually saw Jagannath, but he was always assisting the pujaris by bringing water for bathing Jagannath.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the end of his life, he never saw Jagannath, ever. So how can we find that just by assisting?
No, it's not. The point there is not that he never saw Jagannath. That I never heard was part of the story. If you heard it from me, then that wasn't part of the story. If you heard it from someone else, then that's another thing. The point was, is he was so worried about the performance of his service that he was doing that service for a person that wasn't as prominent. You know what I'm saying? In other words, he's bringing the bath water for Krishna every day, but not thinking about Krishna who he's bringing the water for. He's just thinking how to nicely bring the water and do everything right and proper. And then at the end of his life, he's thinking, oh, who's going to bring the water for Krishna? But it's not, he's worried about the activity rather than about Krishna himself. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, what will be his destination?
He's doing service and all that, so he would be, you know, connected with devotees and all that, but he'd still have to continue to develop that relationship with Krishna. You know, so it'd be nicely situated, but the point is that won't get him back to Godhead that lifetime. Because you're supposed to remember Krishna. You're doing it for to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
So, but we need to do some practical service, either by assisting Vaishnavas or direct. I mean, we can't just observe devotees doing service. We need.
I mean, the Abhishek thing.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
No, I don't mean...
So I'm saying, so that's not what it meant, because you are taking part in the kirtan and watching. That is the service, according to Pancharatra, when there's an Abhishek. In Pancharatra, you have a couple of pujaris that bathe the deity. That's their service. Everybody else, the hundreds of thousands, they're supposed to watch. That's their service, and they get the exact same benefit. So by watching there, it's just like Mangal Artik, right? There's one devotee doing Mangal Artik, and there's hundreds that are watching. But you get the same benefit as that pujari who's offering. Otherwise, if we say that, then we'd all have to be up there offering the Artik. But also remembering the Lord, hearing him chanting, remembering, these are all services. So you're doing something. To sit and do nothing, you know, not go to the Abhishek and do nothing, that would be another thing, because then it's not service. Does that make sense? So the idea is the Lord's happiness is what's going to be our happiness. So whatever form that takes, if that means that we are doing something, if we're the pujari, that means then we do the Abhishek. We're not the pujari, we don't do the Abhishek, we watch the Abhishek.
In Mayapur, it's quite different to being in the West. Like, you get so used to being the one, you know, dressing the deities and...
Because you're the pujari, so you're doing that.
Yeah. You're just kind of observing.
Yeah. Because you get the same benefit. Same benefit as that. Does that make sense? Okay. You finish your question? Yeah. Jivas who are enslaved by Maya prefer to enjoy material life, and this desire perpetuates their bondage to the cycle of birth and death. This is the root cause of the threefold miseries. But when the spirit soul becomes disgusted with material enjoyment and rededicates his time and energy to Lord Krishna's loving service, he reaps the greatest benefit. This benefit is compared to the cluster of pristine white lotuses. For just as the moon's soothing rays cause the white lotuses to bloom, the rasa-laden rays of the chanting of the holy name stirs the enfolded petals of the lotus of the jiva's good fortune, causing it to open. As it is said, devotion gives birth to devotion. The sincere and faithful devotee must therefore follow the principles of elementary bhakti by regularly hearing and chanting the holy name until the first light of pure devotion begins to dawn in the heart. The closed lotus flower, touched by the moon's rays, awakens in full bloom. And similarly, when the congregational chanting of the holy name spreads the rays of bhava, the essence of Hladini, and impregnates the soul's heart, Rati, conjugal love for Sri Krishna, then lights up in his consciousness, bestowing the highest benediction. This is what is meant by the rays of the benediction moon. Right, so this would be... Okay. So this is the other aspect. What the first one was saying about it's his Swadharma, that is because... Yeah. So when one gives up the material endeavor and takes up the devotional process, right, then that itself then gives the rays of the benediction moon, because the benediction is then that devotion, or that, how you say, love that is appreciated between Krishna and his devotees. Then through the chanting of the holy name, a ray of that then enters the heart, and that pure consciousness of the living entity then starts to blossom, right? Blossoming, then that comes to the, yeah, yes.
It seems to always say congregational chanting. So is it exclusive of japa, or is that included? Is japa included?
Japa is included, means Sankirtan, means everything in connection with, you know, the Vaishnav, basically, culture. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be there. So that means you're chanting with others. So there's always going to be, you go to Mangalartik, then it's congregational chanting. You know, discussing the you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, that would be the same kind of thing. So in other words, we're always hearing and chanting about Krishna and the association of devotees. But part of that then is one's japa, you know, like that. But one will see it as one is alone chanting japa as sadhana, but the point is that the name is Krishna, and that includes all of his associates. So then that also is on that platform if one appreciates that. If one doesn't, then better to get together with other devotees. And it's very, you know what I'm saying? Because the point is those who do appreciate it, then they always like to be around other devotees who are chanting. Right, so there'll always be that congregation, because Krishna, that's one of the qualities of Krishna, he's never alone. He's always surrounded by loving devotees. That means there's always congregational chanting. Is that okay?
Just one more point. This is Rati, conjugal love for Sri Krishna. Is Rati quite conjugal?
Rati is bhava. So generally, that is the preliminary love of Godhead. Then that can come up to prema, as we saw before. Then from that prema, that's as far as it gets, basically in awe and reverence. Right? Then when that deepens something, then you get the sneha, then it turns into what, like with the cowherd boys and that friendship, you know, or other devotees who are in that rasa, like that. So, but basically here, from what I understand, if this is from the original, but this is Banu Maharaj's, so generally he doesn't put things in. So then here, that must be in the work itself. Then here, conjugal love is then the general principle of something that is gained by those in the Gaudiya line, like that. But the line is such that anybody in any rasa can take advantage, and it will take them to that platform. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you have a system that can take you to the conjugal rasa, it can easily take you to, you know, friendship rasa. That's not difficult at all. Right? So we see in Lord Chaitanya's associates, most are his intimate associates in that capacity. But at the same time, as there's also others who are taking advantage of the mission to express their affection for Krishna in their particular rasa. Right? You know, you had Murari Gupta, who's Hanuman, so he's, you know, just seeing Lord Ramachandra has come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's not going to change his rasa, but still the mission and the process remains the same.
Is that okay?
So it's just something that's known, but just not talked about much. Because the point is it's talking about it doesn't make it happen any faster, right? Or give any more understanding. You know what I'm saying? The performance of the activities to get one to that platform of bhava, that's more important. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is what your natural position is, that will be revealed at that time anyway. So then there's no need to get too distracted by all that beforehand. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay.
The holy name reveals the soul's eternal relationship with Krishna. When does a person, having obtained this level of pure devotion, acquire his pure spiritual identity? Lord Chaitanya answers this question by saying, Vidya Vadhu Jivanam, the life of all transcendental knowledge. The Supreme Lord Shakti has two aspects, Vidya, knowledge, and Avidya, ignorance. Yogamaya, the Sarup Shakti, is the Lord's internal spiritual potency. This potency is called Vidya, whereas Mahamaya, his external energy, is Avidya. It is the latter that creates the material universe and covers the soul's sorup. Right. So you always notice, means on these that they're dealing with different levels here, like that. Because here it's already being given that one is always going to be chanting. So that is given, how you say, because of that association, then that will always be, how you say, that it's natural, it's the sorup of the soul. Right? He's always going to be engaged in chanting. So then what that will give then is this form of that. It will reveal one's position and everything, what is there. Right? So then that brings it to the point of the vidya. Then having gotten that benediction, then one will know one's position. Right? That makes sense. Because what he's doing is, from the one thing he's explaining it, but then that naturally there's a result of that. So that's the next section. Right? And from Chaitra Jarpa Namarjanam, then comes Bhava Mahadevagni Navapanam. Right? So, but then that will be explained there. You know, but the idea is that this will connect and give that. Then that one gives the next one, and that one gives the next one. Like that. When, by his sincerely following the process of hearing and chanting, the first rays of pure devotion finally appear on the horizon of the sadhaka's heart, Then the Bhakti Devi, the eradicatress of all unwanted material desires, detrimental to the Lord's service, eclipses the avidya potency. By suffusing the soul with spiritual knowledge, Bhakti Devi destroys both the gross and subtle coverings of the soul. Simultaneously, the jiva's original spiritual form becomes manifest, so he acquires the form of a gopi, for example, if his pure spiritual propensities are steeped in the conjugal mood. Thus, it stands proven that Krishna's holy name is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge, vidyavadhu jivanam. Sarup Shakti is therefore often said to be Krishna's wife. When the gross and subtle bodies of the jiva are completely destroyed, the infinitesimal soul regains its original pristine purity. Although the jiva is anu, or minutely small, his capacity for spiritual happiness is not minute. To remove any doubt about this fact, Lord Chaitanya adds, Anandam Bhurivardhanam. It is an ever-increasing ocean of bliss. The holy name of the Lord, through the Haladini potency, endlessly expands the natural bliss inherent in the soul. Thus his happiness increases by leaps and bounds, fixing the soul eternally in one of the spiritual mellows of Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya. When thus established in his eternal spiritual mellow, he continues to relish the limitless nectar at every step of the exchange of loving emotions, in his transcendental relationship with the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna's enchanting beauty, his divine qualities, and his sublime pastimes are eternal and ever fresh in ecstasy. Inebriated with divine prema, the pure jiva continuously drinks that ecstatic nectar. Yet still the Lord's captivating beauty is forever new. Right, so then we're seeing here is that when this devotional service, when the pure devotional service starts to come, it says here the first rays, then Bhakti Devi eradicates the unlimited, the unwanted material desires. Right, so we see here is that nishta is then where it's explained where pure devotional service begins. Right, that's where it's starting. So we see here is that that coming to that platform, then by the grace of Bhakti Devi, then she eradicates these unwanted material desires that get in the way of devotional service. From that, then naturally when one will progress forward, because when that is, things are eradicated enough, then one becomes steady and that develops into a taste. Right? Because one is performing activities, but it's not steady, so then it will be distracted by so many things. But when it stops being distracted, then this taste for devotional service comes up. When the taste comes, then things move forward very, very quickly. Right? So then it brings one very fast to the next platform. So then that brings up the point of ananda. So then that will bring one to the transcendental platform. One will become happy. But because it's been pointed out very strongly that we are minute, right? We're small. So then one might think, well, my happiness would be very small. But the point is then this same potency then expands the happiness of the jiva. Right? And so then it just, it says by leaps and bounds, he's saying, that just increases, that just grows. So then the living entity comes, enjoys more and more. You know, so eternally that's expanding. Does that make sense? So it's one is it. So we're small and what we get out of things is small when we're connected with the material world. We come to the transcendental platform, our position may be, we may be small, but our happiness, which is actually why we're worried about anything, then that expands. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Does the process of learning really have to be long and drawn out?
Does it have to be long and drawn out and painful and annoying and distressing and disturbing and distracting?
Yeah. There's so many obstacles in the heart, and you know, can they all be kind of in one sweep?
Let us say you have a box, and in this box are so many things that you've considered valuable at one time or another, but at this point in time they have absolutely no use for you. How long does it take to get rid of them?
Not long,
but it could take. So the longer you take and drag it out, the more painful it is, and the shorter the... Yes.
Going with that analogy, a lot of times people think, yeah, okay, I'm ready. They throw out the stuff in the box, and next week they're in the mall getting more stuff because they weren't ready.
But that was, but now it's newer and fresher.
Yes. So that can also be an excuse to, okay, let's redecorate the place, let's give everything away, and then...
Why are we so attached to these curtains and this furniture? We should get rid of this.
Let's go and turn it up. Well, we see a lot of times people think they're ready for the next phase and they have these type of emotions, let's give everything away or let's sacrifice and surrender.
Give up everything, move to Mayapur.
Yeah. And it goes in cycles and then there is regression.
Because technically here is what we're giving up is not, means that is if you take that the advancement is the form, then this problem could be run into very easily. But if you're taking it to the advancement is the quality with which you deal with the form, then It's more natural that if there's no need for that form, it can be given up because you have no attachment to it first. So, in other words, the form is there that is there because of your attachment to it. Then by dealing with it so that you're not attached to the form, but you still deal with it, then when it comes, so as long as that form is useful in your service, you continue. But as soon as that form is not useful anymore, then it can be given up because you don't have any need for it anyway. So that will be complete. That detachment will be complete. But generally it's like, okay, this is trouble, I give it up. You know, or it has no taste, I give it up. But then we find that the concept of that thing we needed. Does that make sense? But maybe that specific individual one was a problem, so then we figure another one. You know, like this car is a problem, you know, but you need a car, so then you're going to get another one. But if it's whatever you have, you work with it, then you don't have a need for cars. So if you have a service that requires a car, you use one, and if you don't, you don't have one. So you don't have to have a car because you need cars, you know, even if you, whether you use it or not. So that's why in the Vedic thing, the idea is that you deal with something in that way. It means first is your inspiration for dealing, in other words, the Vedic concept is deal with everything expertly. Then your first inspiration is going to be because of your own attachment to that, so you become very expert at it. Once becoming expert at it, then one's supposed to, or in the process, one is supposed to then try to improve the quality. By improving the quality of it, then quality meaning your consciousness, like that, then it brings to the point where you can deal with that thing very nicely in Krishna consciousness, but you don't have a need to deal with it. But since that's your service anyway, so that's what you deal with. You know, you may have taken that service up because of your attachment, but now you're performing that service because it's favorable to Krishna. You know, so it's not because of attachment. So as long as it's favorable, then it's fine. But if it turns out to be not favorable, then it's left, and then there's no need to go back. Because the other one, you're throwing out the form of it, but the need for it isn't thrown out in the process. So the Vedic thing is deal with the form in the proper way, that there's no need for dealing with that form. But you learn to not deal, means you, by dealing with that form, you learn, or gauging that form in Krishna's service, that's how you remove the need for that kind of, activity. Is that okay? Then there won't be the problem of this going back. But generally what it is much of the time is when there's a problem with the particular detail of that form that they're attached to, then they feel that that's renunciation or that's knowledge. But it can be found as when one gets rid of that, then one still has the need for that concept. Then you can understand as then it was like you said, premature. Then it's a matter of then dealing with something that's correct and dealing with it to that point that one doesn't need to. So there's no need to make that mistake again. You know? In other words, one might make that mistake, but once made, one doesn't make it again because one knows that attachment is there. Is that okay? Okay. Right? You understand? So it's a matter of being able to tell the difference between the form and the attitude of what you're dealing with it. In other words, the activity and its form. The activity and its attitude. Right? So much of the time, because we tend to deal on the externals anyway, especially in the modern culture, it's focused just on externals, like that. But it's not that the Vedic doesn't have plenty of externals. Right? A lot of people are absorbed in externals. But the idea is that from the externals, then you improve the quality. Right? So from being lazy to being active. In being active, then being active according to the Shastra. In being active according to the Shastra, that one is, you know, aware and being doing very things very nicely according to that. Doing things nicely according to that, to improving the quality of why you're doing it. Are you doing it for yourself, or are you doing it for the benefit of others? Right? Is it self-centered, or is it sacrifice? having brought it to the point of sacrifice, that will raise it to the level of liberation. Now, do you want to leave it just at liberation, or do you want to actually know God? Right, so all these different stages are there. This is the process. So in that, the form is always the medium. Right? I say. So does that make sense? Like the form is the medium, not the message. Right? The form is the medium. So that form, that is the medium through which you can express your devotion. So in the beginning, it's generally our own inspiration, our own needs are more prominent, but we connect that to Krishna. But with time, is that expression of that affection to Krishna becomes the prominent, and then without any personal need in that area, then, how do you say? The activity is done with proper devotion. Like that. In that state, one can continue it, because if you have no need for it, that means you have no attraction or aversion. So you can deal with it if that's favorable. But if it's not favorable, then you don't. Is that okay? Gotcha. So end here.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Sure. That's quick.
Yeah, that's quick. I'm in the process of buying a property.
Oh, okay.
And I was curious, are beavers a good sign or a bad sign if they're on the property?
Beavers.
They eat the trees and make dams.
Like eager beavers?
Yeah.
I have never heard of them as a, that's in India you have beavers?
No,
India. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm really not sure.
Okay.
I would think anything that doesn't, you know, kill you or, you know, things like that would be nice. I don't think that they would be a problem. I would take them as that's nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.